Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show today is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at unitednotions.com or moda.com or modabakeshop.com. Find them all over the internet. My first guest this afternoon is Jennifer Dick, and Jennifer's blog is 42 Quilts, so you might have been hanging out there with her. And it's really exciting. Jennifer has, besides being an author, she has a new job that I'm so excited to hear about. She is going to be the executive editor of a new series line of books with Kansas City Star. And so I can't wait to know what that's all entailing. So hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is really, really great. You know, having a new exciting job like that, it must be like you must just feel on top of the world.
Oh, it is wonderful. I am so excited about what we're doing over there. We have decided that in, how do I explain this? We have been... sorry, I'm a little nervous, Pat.
No, that's okay.
We've been following the modern movement since the beginning over at Starbucks, and we've been very excited about all the new people that has modern quilting has drawn into quilt making. And over the last couple years, we've noticed that there's kind of a new little aspect of modern quilting called modern traditionalism. And that's just basically where you take traditional blocks, traditional settings, and add all the wonderful modern characteristics to it to make it new, fresh, wonderful.
You know, Jennifer, one of the things is I'm having a bit of trouble hearing you. We have a bit of a crackly on the line. I don't know if it's you or not. I've just written the producer. So I'm going to ask you a question, but I'm not sure we can hear it right this moment. So we may have to call you back. So just hang in there.
Sorry.
No, okay. We'll work it out. But with the new line of called My Stars with Kansas City Star. That's
My Stars. That's our new.
Right. It's the new sort of publications, and it's going to be, you know, this fresh sort of modern style of quilts that are going on out there. What, you know, you work in that style yourself, don't you?
Absolutely. I love modern quilt making. It has been such a breath fresh air for me. These new quilts that people are making, the lighter, brighter, just more interesting subject matter. It's just been fun, and I'm very glad to be a part of it.
So tell me a little bit.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Just go ahead as if I can. Don't worry about it. Tell me a little bit about your own personal quilt making, because you are also an author with Kansas City Star. You have several books with them. Tell me a little bit about how you got started with the quilting.
I decided to take a quilt making class. This was about 1993. Back then I was really into CrossFit. And I was in a quilt shop that also sold CrossFit supplies, and I was looking at all the pretty fabrics that all those ladies over there were playing with.
And there was a sign for a beginning quilt making class. And I just signed up. I don't even really remember why, but it was a little simple wall hanging. It was all by hand. I didn't even own a sewing machine at the time, but you know how it is. When you make that first quilt, you either love it or never make another one. And
right.
I just loved it. I just took to it immediately. And then from there, I'm largely self-taught. Me and Alex Anderson on Simply Quilt. I think she inspired a whole generation of us.
Yeah, quilting with the television show, isn't it true? You know, there were so many great shows out there. You could learn so much. It was crazy, you know.
Yeah. What and made I had you... small kids, so it was great.
What made you decide to start blogging about your quilting? Did you blog prior to, you know, blogging about quilting, or did you just start with that topic?
No, this was my first blog. Well, the reason I got started was, my quilt is, my blog is 42 quilts. What happened was that year when I was 42, I was going to make 42 quilts. I don't know why. I think I had just seen Julie and Julia and thought that sounded really cool. So I was going to make 42 quilts that year and blog about it. Well, about 3 months in, I made two quilts.
Oh my.
So I realized that I wasn't going to make 42 quilts that year. That was kind of an unrealistic goal for me.
But anyhow, the blog stayed.
I don't know why. And then I just started blogging about all my thoughts on quilts and the various things I was doing quilt related.
I love that. I love the concept that you were going to make, 42 quilts. You know, I have like a double nickel this year, but I am not going to confess to making 55 quilts this year. I think I'm going to.
I think I'll someone else.
Right, right. I'll take your lead and say, oh, well, maybe that's not like such a great idea. Tell me what your most recent personal book is that you have out, Jennifer.
Well, I have written 4 books with Star Books, and the most recent one is kind of a fun little book. It's my town where I live here in Missouri. We had a quilt documentation project a few years back where we invited everybody with a quilt older than 50 years that we made in our county to bring it in to be photographed and documented. And the book is really cool. It's a result of all the quilts we got in because, you know, we didn't know what we were going to get. I thought we would get, 50 grandmother's flower garden quilt or something like that. So we got a huge variety. And so we've got some slave made ones. We've got one that was made in 1852. Just beautiful quilts and a huge wide array of skills and beauty. and they're wonderful. And the stories that go with them are just amazing. So that book is a collation of all those with their stories.
And that's the one that's called Stories and Stitches.
Yes, correct. Stories and Stitches.
Yeah. You love the appliqué. I love the appliqué. Tell me what style of appliqué. Yeah, isn't it great? I mean, you have so much freedom, don't you, when you appliqué?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because there's some things you just can't teach.
Right.
And your only option is appliqué. I do a freezer paper preparation method where I press the fabric to, I cut out the shape in freezer paper and press it to the fabric and then glue it down. Then I sew it down and cut out from the backside the shape. And that I just really.
So you really like that sort of process of preparing everything. Is this sort of it's sort of calming.
It's a lot of preparation. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, by the time you get to the sewing goes so fast. It's been all preparation in my method.
I really
do like that, and it gives me the results I want. I can be as perfect as I want to be.
It does give you a little bit more control, doesn't it, to actually prep your shapes versus I do a lot of needle turn when I do hand work, if I'm doing hand applique. And so it's a little harder to control the shape that way at times.
I've never done
needle turn. I attempted needle turn and it didn't go too well. and that's when I thought I was never going to applique. There's a lot of people who say, I never applique, but I just say to them, well, do some research and find a method that works for you.
Right.
Because there's a lot of ways to applique and there is something for everyone.
I think that's true. You have to try different methods. Like I teach machine applique a lot, and people, you know, they love that because it's a little, I don't know, it just speaks to a lot of people who want to sit at their machine. So there's
right,
different ways,
right.
All different
now,
ways.
You do that machine, is your machine applique with it fusible?
Yes, I do fusible. I have done other methods, but okay. It's really eliminating that type of turned under prep. So. You know, that's why it's so great. There's
right.
different options. What if you've done some tips and things on your blog?
Right.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've been quilting for 20 years now, and you know how it is. Over time, I just accumulate information, and I thought it would be fun to just have a tip of the day I put on my Facebook page. And I don't do a tip every day. But I several times a week I try to, and they're just fun little, you know, just little things. And some turn out so well, and some are just as unique as I thought. And one time there was one that everyone in the whole world does except me. So I learned from my Facebook fans as well.
Yeah, that's always it. Sometimes we're the last to learn a tip. It's like, oh, really? Yes, everybody's known that. What do you see happening and trending right now, Jennifer? You're out there on the internet and as a publisher and editor. Also, what's sort of coming on the horizon that you see for quilting?
Yeah, I'm dying down in times and changing. I see more and more people coming into it. I see just every I see things getting lighter and brighter in general, and I think that's what's kind of drawing people towards modern. I see people taking modern and running with it and taking aspects of it they want and incorporating it into what they've always been doing. And that's exciting to me. You know, we don't have to do the same old stuff anymore. We can be free to do different things, to add different elements into our quilt. And
so
I think
true.
That's exciting.
So true. Jennifer, this has been amazing. Jennifer Dick from 42 Quilts, executive editor at My Stars Quilts. Jennifer, this has been wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com. Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See our editors share peoplequilt.com and clicking on watch videos.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have fabric designer and author Nancy Rink here. She creates amazing quilts. They're just gorgeous. They have got so much detail and wonderful colors. And I'm super interested in hearing about the books that she's writing. They have a lot of stories behind them. I thought it'd be fun for her to come on and tell us about it herself. So welcome to the show, Nancy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Pat.
I was going to say, Nancy, you come to quilt making from a sewing background. I was reading on your bio there that you actually started out sewing costumes. How did you get from costumes to quilts?
Well, that's a good question. Because I sewed garments from about the time, I don't know, I was probably 10, 11 years old. I have an aunt who was just retired from the movie business. So she did costuming. That's how I sort of got down that road.
Oh, wow.
Did you make any
costumes for anybody famous? I have to ask that first.
I got to make some costumes for one of Richard Pryor's movies called JoJo Dancers. We did a lot of lingerie for the prostitutes in the whorehouse.
Well, la-di-da.
That's a lot different from quilting.
Just a bit, yeah. I guess you could put those kind of fabrics in your quilts if you wanted to.
So, no, I got into quilting. I was in my early 20s, and my grandmother wanted to take a quilting class. She talked me into going with her, and she bought, all the great tools because she could afford it. And I was a poor 20-year-old going to college, and so I just had the basics. But she decided after the first project that she hated quilting. She didn't see the point in cutting up, as she said, perfectly good yardage into little pieces and sewing it back together again. So after that, she gave me all her nice supplies, so I was sort of off and running.
Ah, okay. Well, that's not a bad start. So you started as a young woman. I bet you were one of the few 20-year-olds in that class.
Oh, most definitely. And,
yeah.
I just made a few quilts. I mean, I was in college, and then I got married, was raising a family. So I really didn't get heavily into quilting until, several years later.
Let's talk a little bit about your books that have these amazing stories in them. I really want you to tell me about your Away From Home, the book called Away From Home, Quilts Inspired by the Lowell Factory Girls. And you wrote this with your husband, right?
Yes, and it was actually his brainchild. My husband's a great pusher. He's always pushing me to try something new.
What's his first name, Nancy?
Oliver.
Oliver, okay.
He had recently retired from teaching. He's a history professor at Cal State Bakersfield for 37 years, and he retired. And I took him to the first quilt market he'd ever been to, and he was blown away. Anybody who goes, I think to market for the first time, they just don't realize what a huge industry it is.
Right, right.
And so he just said, why don't you write a book? And so he just started talking to the Kansas City Star people in their booth and told them this idea he had because he knew what was in the archives at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. And they have a huge archive of letters that were actually written by the Lowell Factory Girls themselves, home to their families. They have all sorts of other correspondence, too, from all the factory managers. But we were interested in hearing the voices of the Lowell Mill Girls. And so we took a trip back to Lowell, did the whole tour of the factories, the waterworks. It's just an amazing, it's a national park there. And we just decided we wanted to tell their story. They were the first female workforce in the United States during the Industrial Revolution. They formed the first all-female union ever. They were the first female union to actually strike and had a successful strike. And they were a huge force in the forming of New England, getting those farm girls into the actual workforce.
Now, what do the quilts in the book look like? How did you decide, which design to create that the letters inspired?
The feature quilt that's on the cover of the book, and that is a Sanford quilt, focuses on there's a central image of the girls. So I took looked at old drawings and photographs, and sort of, very simply reproduced those in applique. And there's a simple applique factory that they're standing beside. And then it's a sampler all around that. And I just chose, blocks I liked to make, for that sampler quilt.
Okay.
And Judy Wathermel did the fabric line, and she used swatches that from Old Sturbridge Village that would have been produced in that era. And it's the fabric line, it's reproduction and historical, but it has a different look because we're so used to seeing Civil War prints that are so brown and muddy. Mm-hmm. And the early 1800s, the fabrics were much clearer and brighter.
Oh,
yeah,
well, that's so interesting.
The line has a really nice look to it. And well, the quilt, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I just think it's an incredible idea. I've been to the factory, to the museum, to do the tour, and it's just a very inspirational place for anybody who loves fabric, don't you think, to just go there at least once?
Oh, yeah. And just, you really can feel, you feel like you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that other people have walked where you're walking. And it is. It's just one of those very inspiring experiences.
Yeah, we had a docent who, like, ran the machines and talked a bit about how, you know, there was no light. You know, so, you know, they had the big windows. It's just the whole thing is amazing. It's well worth it.
Definitely.
Now, the two of you, you and Oliver, are collaborating again. What are you working on right now?
Well, another one of his brainstorms. So our book we're working on now sort of has a long story to how we got here, but he had wanted to do a California-inspired quilt book. And so he wanted to tell the story of the California mission system and do some quilts inspired by the California mission. And so I approached Marcus, that's the company I designed fabric for, about designing a fabric line. Because it's not a historical line, because all that would, the fabric then would have been just woven, you know, coarse woven fabric or fabrics imported from Spain. So it's more of inspired by like Spanish and Mexican tiles and colors. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to visit any of the California missions.
I probably have, but it's been a long time ago. But they're gorgeous.
Yeah. And so they've all, most of them have been restored at this point, except a couple that they've kept very historically accurate.
Right.
Yeah, so they are. They're very colorful, bright. There's that Mexican-Spanish influence. So that's the direction that fabric line has taken.
Neat.
And, yeah. And so then as we were in the process of looking up our whole book idea, my mom is sick and she passed away, and a relative just randomly sent me a family genealogy that she thought I might like it.
Oh, wow.
And so we're looking at the genealogy, and we discovered that my fifth great grandfather was part of the Portola expedition that traveled through California setting up the mission. So there's that family tie-in that was just
like connecting the dots.
It was amazing when we found that out. So now it's taken on a whole nother life. So it's got that sort of family connection, and so we're going to tie in a little bit of family history from what we know, and sort of give it that personal touch.
So what? Tell me about your fabric lines. Your other fabric lines besides that one.
Well, I've only done one other.
Oh, okay. Like you have to start somewhere.
One a little bit. So my very first fabric I ever designed, I started backwards, truly. My first fabric was a backing. So I'm sort of known for the Amish with a twist fabrics, which are all solid. Mm-hmm. And so I designed a backing fabric to go on the quilt.
Oh, how
so
funny.
That was my first. I know.
Oh, that is so interesting, Nancy. You know what? We all come at this career so differently. That is okay. So now, tell me what about the Amish with a twist? So, just in case, you know, people haven't heard about it yet.
So the Amish with a Twist started, again, with Marcus. I have a wonderful long relationship with them. And I did little design work for them, and I worked full-time as an English teacher, teaching high school advanced placement English. And the marketing director, Patty Violet, kept saying, if you ever decide to quit your day job, we'd like you to try doing a block of the month for us. No. I finally quit my day job. And so she said, well, let's just get your feet wet. We have this solid line. It's not very big. We haven't really done anything. If you can come up with something, it's all yours. And so that's sort of where I got started with that. And I just started thinking solid and, you know, sort of solid make you think of the Amish. And, so I designed the Amish with a Twist, the first Amish with a Twist quilt. And being a teacher, I wanted it to be like a teaching quilt. So each of the installments focuses on a different skill, quilting skill. So they're learning their skills as they go along. And it gets, Nancy, you know, increasingly difficult.
Nancy, this is just, that is so neat. I really love it. You know, we're pretty much going to be out of time. We have just chatted away. And this and this has been wonderful. I want people to know where to find you at nancyrinkdesigns.com, where you can see her books, because Nancy's written other books too, besides the ones that we talked about, and her fabric, and all the Amish Twist. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Pat.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
And welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Now we're going to talk a little bit more about thread. Leah Day from Free Motion Quilting and Leah Day blog, website and all that stuff is back. So we're going to talk about thread. We talked about thread last month and we didn't finish up. So Leah, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Sorry, I messed up your website. It's leahday.com.
It would be, let's see, that's a new site that's actually just being launched in the next couple of weeks, leahday.com. Yeah, that's okay.
That's good.
We're just getting the finishing touches on it, but you can always find us at freemotionproject.com.
Okay, there we go. Sorry about that. I sort of had in my head the name thing. So, okay, let's talk about thread. Because you can't have a quilt without thread, can you?
Absolutely not.
So what do you, you know, let's talk about color, like the thread color. Because we talked last month about weight and a lot about that, about the weights and the different, you know, poly versus cotton and all of that kind of thing. But color, what is your philosophy for, let's just do the process you use to pick color.
Well, you know, a lot of my quilts start out with a very specific idea. You know, I even start the quilting process. You know, I kind of have an idea in my head of how it's going to look, and then I run through tests. So I don't leave it to chance, and I don't leave it to a guess. If I am making something and it is taking me longer than a day to make it, then I am going to run a test on it. So that means I'm going to take scrap fabric from that quilt, whatever it is. I'm going to take, you know, 6-inch square of it. I'm going to baste it with, you know, little 6-inch square of batting and a 6-inch square of backing. Quilt that that fabric with, let's say, 3 different thread colors. And I'm also not only testing the thread color, I'm also testing the design. So you might stitch stippling with, let's say, white. And then you switch to pebbling, and you're going to get 2 totally different looks because you've got so much more thread play with stippling versus, with pebbling versus stippling. So it's good to see if you're going to take one thread and you're going to take it through your whole quilt, but you're going to be changing designs through it, you need to know what that's going to look like. So I always test. And if I'm playing with multiple designs through a quilt, I always try all of them out and make sure that they're going to look good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big commitment, isn't it, to always test. I think a lot I think a lot of people don't go there.
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, I know it sounds arduous, like, oh, gosh, I got a good test. But the thing about it is it's also practice. It's practice with the free motion quilting design you're going to use. It's practice with that fabric combination that you're using. I mean, I've had people email me and say, Leah, I'm running into certain areas of my quilt and I can't quilt over them. The thread is just completely breaking as soon as I get to these sections. But what they find after it, they would have found this out if they had tested it. But that particular fabric that they were stitching over wasn't 100% cotton. It was a cotton poly blend that got mixed in there accidentally. Had they tested it beforehand, it wouldn't have ended up in the quilt, and it wouldn't have ended up causing them so many problems. So it's one of those things that, I mean, I know it seems annoying and really nitpicky, but gosh, it'll save you so many headaches and so much time.
And, you know, it's really true for, like you said, if you're going to be spending some time on this and you want it to look good, it really is worth doing that.
Yeah, and then those samples, you can keep them. You know, if you're using the same fabric across several different quilts, well, I mean, you can keep that sample and say, well, hey, that thread didn't work for this quilt, but hey, it'll work for this quilt based on this sample. I don't have to stitch it out again. So keep them.
You
know,
I do a lot of.
You can just kind of set them up.
And you can make them into dust rags too if you don't want to keep them later. You can just sort of.
Absolutely.
I've been taking, you know, when I teach and I show color and, like, you know, what can be done with the color, I pull the one strand because, you know, a lot of people will just take the whole spool. And unfortunately, sometimes in the store, the spools are totally wrapped, so you can't really get a single strand. But if you can get a single strand, you lay that one strand, and it's an incredible difference to the whole spool sitting on fabric.
Absolutely.
Have you noticed that, you know, over time, are you finding you personally, do you match your thread colors to the fabric, or some of your work is more in the art realm, maybe, you know, like people looking at them, I think, oh, you know, it's not like you're going to throw on the bed, it's more like for the wall or, you know, an art piece, but you want your thread to be seen, so you have high contrast. But do you also blend?
It depends on the quilt. It depends on the quilt, and it depends on what you're trying to do with it. If you're trying to just create kind of a calming effect, if you're really, you know, if you want those piecing elements to come to the forefront and you really don't want your quilting to be something that's a big aspect, a big dominant design feature of the quilt, then sure, match your thread. But just a quick warning, you are going to go blind in that process. I mean, I've tried matching lately. I've been fiddling around with some quilts where I was matching threads. And after years of contrasting, I'm so used to seeing that beautiful contrast that it's really a nice indication of, you know, am I stitching on the line properly? And am I keeping my nice stitch quality? When I match thread, you're getting away with a whole lot. But, you know, those mistakes are still there. And, you know, it's really hard to see where you're going. So it's real easy to just stitch right back over a section you've already quilted and not realize it until you're on top of your previous stitching and you'll have to rip that out. So,
you know what?
I don't like contrast.
Yeah. If people are having trouble seeing, which of course, you know, a lot of people sew at night, your lighting's not so good. You can always take it, can't you, just a shade off, like a shade lighter, a shade darker. What would you recommend?
Well, I would say not just a shade. I would go to maybe the analogous color. So let's say, or it's like the opposite of the color wheel is what I made. I'm not sure on the on the terminology. So let's say you're quilting on purple fabric to go to yellow. I know that sounds like a crazy contrast, but if that sounds too crazy for you, then maybe go for the tertiary color, in which case that would be green. So green on top of purple. If it was blue, you're talking, you know, yellow. But, you know, it depends on the shade. You know, yellows, if you mix enough, you know, kind of black into a yellow, it turns brown. So brown on top of a blue. I mean, I know those kind of colors sound completely insane, but all I can say is, you know, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of color. Don't be afraid of saying, okay, well, here's a quilt that, you know, I'm bored with. I'm frankly completely bored with the piecing. You know, it was kind of blah through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Make it something more by challenging yourself with the thread and don't just stitch more blah on top of blah, because then you're just going to end up with something you're really frustrated with.
You know, also there's, I call them sort of like magic colors. You know, that I have a lot of people who take my classes that like the sort of earthy colors, you know, and so there's that like deep reds and stuff like that. And I tell them to bring in tans and browns. And then if you like the clear colors, bring in shades of gray. So that people who don't want to buy a lot of threads, who are just sort of doing their own quilts and, you know, don't want that high contrast, that you can have those sort of power colors that go across all things. Just like you were saying, green on top of purple. I can visualize that because it would be amazing. It's, you know, it's not going to be bright, is it?
Not as bright. It depends on the shade. I mean, there's a big difference between a lime green and a forest green.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
a huge difference. I definitely have heard that quite a bit. You know, I've heard olive will blend into everything. I've heard gray will blend into anything. And I think really, you just have to kind of sit down and start stitching. If you have no experience picking thread color at all whatsoever, the general kind of theory and practice is to just match, because that's the easiest thing to do. It doesn't require a lot of effort. It doesn't require a lot of thought. But there's so much more that you can do with a quilt than just matching. You can add another dimension of design. If you just, you know, pick two shades lighter than your fabric color, two shades... Personally, I don't like the combination of dark thread on a light quilt. I think that shows mistakes. I like light thread on a dark quilt, personally. So that's what I generally go for. So I would say, even if you're going with, let's say you have a very dark black quilt, go gray, and you're going to see your stitches so much better and be able to know what you're doing.
I like that. Like it. What about variegated threads? Are you a fan? Do you use them a lot?
Personally, no. I know that some people swear by them. I had a big issue with the spool of variegated thread where it literally changed the tension of my machine as it fed through the top of the machine. And, you know, it would, like, break every time it went to blue. On the blue color, that was wider. I think it was thicker, right? And something else was going on with it where it would literally break the top thread every time I hit the blue color of the variegated thread. I took the spool off and I threw it away, and I've never picked it up again. I really like a solid color. So how do you like variegated thread, Pat?
Right. Yeah, no, I actually do like it. I've never had that problem. And, you know, there are bad spools out there. But, yeah, I do like the variegated. I do have a tip, because just like you with the testing, variegated threads, you really need to test out what's going to happen, because your variation in color could be very subtle. It could be very, very high contrast. You can have a long variegation, so it can start like a really long length, and then some are really, really short. And they all will look different when they're stitched. And so if you make decisions, like I applique a lot, you know, like you do your figures, Leah. If I'm outlining them with variegated, it can look really strange because, you know, I don't.
Glossy.
Yeah, and they sort of like, you know, like what's going on there. So. You know, variegateds are really fun, but I do think it's definitely a stitch it out thing. You need to see what's happening with it. I know I had a question for you that I asked in advance, and I think we want to talk about cones versus spools, because you know, a lot of people use cones for the big long arms, but how about on your domestic machine? Are you using cones?
Yeah, technically I use a cone thread. It's isochord. It's not a cone that's only, it's 1,000 meters of thread. And so it's not a ton, but it's still a lot more than your average spool of, cotton thread that is meant to go sideways. A cone because it's usually a lot wider base. That generally means that you want that thread to stand upright rather than be on its side. And that has a lot to do with the twist of the thread as it's going into your machine. So you're going to want to set that cone. And I've heard of just putting it in a coffee mug, which is a great idea. But I use full stands. I like full stands personally. I found that pretty much any thread will wind off better and into the machine more evenly working off of a full stand. But working on some machines like my Janome Horizons have both had spool stands you could attach to the back of the machine. So it really kind of depends on the machine you're working on.
Yeah. So people shouldn't be afraid of that if they're a domestic quilter.
Oh, absolutely not. Right. No. Just grab a coffee mug, throw the spool in there, and then kind of feed it off from the right and kind of up and over and into your machine. Make sure it's not going to get caught on anything. And then once you kind of get used to it, get a nice spool stand with a real heavy base, and it won't float around your machine table, hopefully.
Perfect. So you do a lot of teaching online, Leah, and I was curious what you were sort of seeing, maybe what's trending. What do you see coming up with the quilters in your group or what you're looking at online? Do you have any quick thoughts?
Well, I think, especially, let's say, the next 10 years, I really think the whole online classes, learning online, as to simply, I grew up in an area that didn't have a quilt shop for many, many years, and I see that as creating an absolute quilting revolution in the next few years, simply because younger and younger people are going to have access to really excellent teachers. Teachers that they would probably have never had access to before. And I think that's just going to be so amazing. I love Crafty. I taught on Crafty, but I'm also a super student. I take tons and tons of classes there. And it's just such a joy to be able to sit and watch my iPad and learn knitting and crochet and stuff that really, I sit there and sometimes my husband will hear me yell something like, I wish I'd known this in high school.
Cool.
Because, a lot of these, it's answering questions I've had since, I was literally in high school struggling with broomstick lace or something. You couldn't figure it out. And I really think that we're going to see a lot more educational sites online. So,
thank you, Leah. We'll see you next month, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat. From start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here at the American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine studio in Des Moines, Iowa, with Jennifer Kautner, the editor of the magazine. So, Jennifer, we're going to talk about some more magazines behind the scenes.
All the secrets.
American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine and Quilts and More are the two sort of main quilt magazines that come out on a regular basis.
Right. American Patchwork and Quilting is our subscription title, so it's 6 times a year every other month. And Quilts and More can be found at newsstands, and we put that out quarterly, 4 times a year.
Now, how do you get the submissions for these two magazines? Because there's a lot of projects in each one.
Absolutely. And we, of course, work with great quilt designers around the country and around the world to submit design ideas, and some of those names are very familiar to our readers. And you, of course, have submitted a lot of projects to us, and we've featured quite a few of them, and our readers love your stuff. But one thing I think people don't know is that we also have published the first designs for a lot of people. So whether people are novices and just starting out as quilt designers, or they're very experienced and our readers have come to know and love them over the years, we publish for all of those.
Right. If it's a great design, give it a go.
Absolutely. We don't care if it's your first design or your 400th design. Mm-hmm. If it's great, we'd love to publish it. So we do take submissions all mm-hmm. the time, and we start with an electronic submission. Because we don't own the projects that we buy, we just have them on loan to us for a while. We mm-hmm. have a storage, space issue. We can't have 500 quilts sitting around the office. So we always start with an email, and anyone is welcome to submit their design ideas. They can send them to apq@meredith.com, and Meredith is M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H, mm-hmm. apq@meredith.com, and in the subject line, just put, design submission. And from there, we look at all those design ideas, and if we were starting to work with someone electronically, you can send swatches of the fabric, a photo of that, a picture or a drawing of the project. If it's completed already, you can send us a photo of the finished work. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. It can just be the idea.
Now, what I really want to know is, how do you develop the issue itself? I mean, are they standalone? Do you look at them across the whole year?
Great question. We do look at it as sort of a whole package. So let's talk about American Patchwork and Quilting. When we look at that, we sort of view it like a class syllabus as we look at the whole year.
Mm.
And if you're a subscriber in this particular year, what kinds of things do you want to learn? We're always about teaching people new techniques and new ideas, or looking for different tools and things that you might want to work with. And then we're also looking at projects over the course of the year to make sure that we get a range of things for you to work on.
So you'll sort of space it out and know in advance that you want to have some teaching things, some types of projects?
Absolutely. We try to have some sort of learning topic for every particular issue, but then we also kind of give it an overarching theme. We might have a storage and organization issue. We might have an issue themed around color and the selection of colors. So there are lots of different themes that we come up with, and we come up with six big themes for the year for all of those issues and make sure that they're all different from one another.
Well, now I'm curious now, when you pick the quilt, do you ever have, the quilt actually comes here.
Right.
I mean, I know because I send them. But do people ever just send you photos and you never get the quilt, or do the quilts always arrive?
The quilts always arrive. Okay. For the quilts that we publish, we try to, once we have that sort of overarching theme for the issue, then we pick out the projects. And in American Patchwork and Quilting, there are usually somewhere between 8 to 10 projects in an issue. And we get those in. We're usually always working at least 6 to 8 months out. So if it's Christmas at your house, it's, summertime here with us, when we're actually shooting those photos. So it's a little bit out of season. You're calendar challenged when you're in the magazine business. But we actually have those projects in-house. And once we get them all in here, we have a big group meeting with our editorial and design team. And we sit and talk about how we think this quilt should be best photographed. Does it fit on a bed? If you see a bed quilt in American Patchwork and Quilting and it's made on the bed, we're really diligent about making sure that it fits a bed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fudge factor there. We're not showcasing it on a bed if it doesn't fit a bed. Now, if it's folded across the bottom of the bed, that's an indication that it maybe isn't a bed-size quilt, but it's more like a throw. But we try to look and make sure we know how we're going to photograph it, what we're going to feature about it. If there's a little learning that can go on with it, it's an interesting technique. The designer mm-hmm. uses a different way of applique. We talk about all those things. And then as quilters, because all of our staff is quilters as well, we try to talk about what would I want to know about this quilt? What would I want to see to make sure you get just the right detail photos or just the right set of instructions?
And the instructions are done by the designer, by you, by both of you. What's that process for general?
So the short answer is yes. it's done by all. The designer sends in her instructions. But we know great quilt designers aren't always great instruction writers. And we know that readers have come to expect a certain level of quality from American Patchwork and Quilting magazine. So we take those original instructions, we revise them to our style. And then I think the thing that really differentiates us from some of our competitors in the industry is that we test all of the patterns in American Patchwork and Quilting. And the way
Wow.
we do that is that we send our set of instructions and illustrations and our photography, our flat shot and our styled shot, to our quilt tester, Laura Banky. And she works off-site, and she has the opportunity then to see only what our readers see. I always say to people, you know how sometimes when a friend is making a quilt pattern and you can't really figure out how something goes together, and you're looking at her project in your hand, and you kind of run your fingers over it, and you look at it, and you hold it up to the light, and you think, okay, now I get how this is done. Well, you don't have that opportunity with a magazine, and so we don't want Laura to have that opportunity either as she's testing those patterns. So we just send her exactly what our readers will see. If she can't make a color option from at least, she does at least 4 blocks of every pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So if she can't make that color option from our instructions, then we know our readers will have a problem and it's back to the drawing board for us. We haven't explained it clearly enough.
That is just incredible. I think everybody really enjoys that they're so well tested. Plus they like Laura's options.
Right. Laura's color options are always a favorite with our readers. And the thing that I think people maybe don't recognize, one time I was working on a presentation, and so I kind of followed a story from that starting point where it comes in to where it goes to our technical editor at the end, who makes sure that all the math and the yardage and requirements that we've given you and the sizes are correct. There are 21 reads of that manuscript from start to finish. So it's gone back and forth between the editors, the designers, the quilt tester, the technical editor, 21 times. So that's not to say we don't make the occasional mistake, but we really try very hard not to have anything in print that isn't accurate.
And when you're also working on the particular issue, you do something that is kind of unique. I mean, I think it is about how you display it for review, for your editorial review.
Right. So once our design team is done putting the stories together and putting the photos in, we're also at a stage in the process at the end where we pin up the whole issue in a conference room, and you can see the whole thing on one giant wall. And we pin it up full size in full color, and we place it up there. And what we're really looking there for is the pacing of the issue. And most people, when you get a magazine, you lay it down on a table or across your lap, and you can look at 2 pages at a time and you flip through. But what people, I think, maybe don't know about is that when we pin that issue up, we're really looking at the flow of the magazine. So we're standing back and saying, okay, we're starting out with something that feels like fall because it's the fall, you know, the fall issue. And so we want to open with something that feels like the season. And then we go from a big project to a little project, or we go from an applique project to a piecing project. And we're also looking at sort of the style or the mood of what we've shot. Is it very traditional? Is it modern? Is it whimsical? And so we kind of really look at the flow of that across the whole issue. And it is fun when people have a chance to see our storyboards in the office and they see an entire issue. You know, there's 140 pages pinned up on the wall and you can see it all at once. You really do have a feel for the pacing of what's going on there.
And you were telling me, I thought it was really interesting that you look at where you place the fabulous advertisements so that, you know, they are something that you can notice.
Right. And that's another thing. We know from our research that readers love the ads as much as they love the editorial because they're often introducing the latest fabric or the latest machines or the newest notions. And so we don't want those to get lost. So if we have a story that's a, you know, cotton candy pink quilt and it's all, you know, very lighthearted and pastel, we try not to put a pastel ad in the middle of that story because we want it to separate from the editorial. We want the ad to get its attention. And we want readers to know the difference between the ads and the editorial. So we do try to look at that as well. And that's the very last stage of the process. Once we've got our pacing lined up, then we place the ads in there. And we, again, look at those in full color and the pacing and the flow of things. And also to give some variety to what's going on, because we don't want all the fabric ads in one section, all the machine ads in another section. We want to mix that up for our readers.
Yeah, it makes it more interesting. Now, you also have an editorial in the front. Did you write a little paragraph?
From the editor column. Yes. You bet. You bet. And that's always just a place where we have an opportunity to chat with our readers. I often put my own address in there for my email, which is just jennifer@meredith.com. And again, Meredith is M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H, and Jennifer is just spelled the traditional way. But you can always email me at jennifer@meredith.com and let me know what you think about what's in that particular issue, or if there's something else that's on your mind that you wish, you know, you have a radio show guest you'd like to hear from, or about any of our products. And I love that opportunity to interact with readers. I get lots of feedback from people who love things, and I also get feedback that I appreciate very much from people who don't like something. And I try to respond and let them know that we appreciate that as much, because unless we hear from people and know what they like or don't like, we can't adjust our next issue. And there is flexibility. We're always looking. One of our copy editors always says, you know, the nice thing about working with a magazine is that you have a chance to reinvent it every 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's not forever. It's just, you know, for this next 2 months, what's the best that you can do? So I enjoy hearing from fans of our brands and hearing what they'd like to see more of or less of or what they think's missing.
And for that is excellent because I think people now can be encouraged to go ahead and write you and read up on that.
Please do.
So this has been fun. Get that behind the scenes. I want to go see that storyboard. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a little break. Hi, this is Pat Sloan again. That was a recording I did with Jennifer Keltner when I was out in Des Moines, Iowa earlier this year. So it was really exciting. I didn't get a chance to intro it before we came to it, but you know, that behind the scenes part is just, you know, I always find it very fascinating to see how the mechanics of anything work. Just like, you know, quilting, you know, you want to know all the details about how to make it work. I just want to tell you that allpeoplequilt.com, American Patchwork and Quilting family of, the website is had a little facelift. And if you're going directly there to look for the radio show, you're going to see a bar along the top with when you put your cursor on it. It says magazines and more. And when you put your cursor there, it'll come down with each of the magazines and then the blog and then the quilting podcast because you know all of these are recorded and you're able to listen to them forever. So I just wanted to point that out. Also, if you've not signed up for the newsletter for American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's newsletter, go to allpeoplequilt.com and you can sign up right at the very top. It says newsletters. And so join, just go ahead and, sign in there, get your details. I also want to invite you to email me, pat@patsloan.com with a suggestion for guests that you might like to hear, somebody that I haven't talked to or somebody maybe I haven't talked to in a long time. If you'd like to send me a note on, you know, who they are, send me their website, and I'll put them in our review cycle because we always like to meet new people. So I'm glad you were here. We're going to be back next week with all new show, new guests. This is Pat Sloan from American Patchwork and Quilting Radio Podcast. You can visit me at patsloan.com and visit the magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. We will see you next week. Thanks for being here.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.